What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene, baby, me and you. On my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And thanks for tuning in today to Out There. It is Wednesday, August 21st. Here in Florence, Massachusetts. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's show, I've got an interview with Toko Tobi from Trinidad, one of my bike partners, just confirmed this weekend when we finally met in person. Well, in New York, not in Trinidad. With an interview with Serene Nimhart, a Hampshire College junior who's spearheading the expansion of composting there on campus. But before I get to those interviews, first, I want to start with a moment of respect for the elders, specifically Frances Crowe. She's shared her wisdom and enthusiasm for peace to all who know her, and her body is about done for this week, and I just want to thank her. And the last words of advice she gave me when I asked was, listen to Democracy Now, people. Also, before I get to the interviews, I guess I'll have a little legal update from my situation. So some of the past few shows, I've mentioned my little bike absconder saga from some charges I defended myself against back in May when I was appropriating seemingly abandoned bikes from UMass. And then a couple of weeks ago, so those charges, I went to court back in July, Gabor, my co-defendant, and I, and we got a 6-month continuation without a finding and fine, but one of the conditions of the continuation was that I stay out of trouble. And also Gabor and I had both gotten 2-year trespass notices from UMass that night of May 22nd. Anyway, so yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned this on last week's show, but a couple of weeks ago, I got in some trouble. I was painting some route markers for a bike ride that went through, actually started and ended at UMass campus. It was like a series of rides called the Farm Ride. And well, you can listen to last week's episode for that little thing. I've been doing it for the last 4 or 5 years, and I thought the risk was worth it. But anyway, suffice it to say that I have a September 6th court date for trespassing, and also not being charged with tagging, which is very nice. But then I think this trespass charge means that I violated the conditions of my continuance to stay out of trouble. I haven't told my legal advisor yet. I'm kind of embarrassed, but I should probably do that soon. All right. So can't think of what else I was going to say. I'll just start with the interview with Clarence Tobias. So he's someone that I connected with because I saw his profile on Workaway, which is how I ended up the farm that I went to in Trinidad, One Family Farm. I found them on Workaway too back in the winter when I went to Trinidad. Anyway, I was looking for bike partners for this Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis project I've been working on all summer, and partners in Trinidad who are excited about receiving, distributing that end of things. And I found Clarence Tobias and contacted him. So we'd been in touch via a little bit of email, but mostly WhatsApp, and then finally met this weekend. He's working at a summer job on Rockaway Beach at a surf shop. So I met him at his work, and he showed me how to surf, which I don't even think I've ever touched a surfboard before. And then we had an interview, so this is it. Oh, yeah, we're here at Rockaway. What do you call it? Rockaway Beach? Rockaway?
Yeah, Rockaway Beach Boulevard right now. Right now we are at location as Rockaway Beach Boulevard, at Beach 90th. Uh-huh. Yeah, approximately.
So I'm here with Toby. Toby, actually, I'll let you introduce yourself so you can say your name right.
Yeah, okay. Name is Clarence Sabaz, better known as Toby or Toko Tobi, as a lot of my friends call me.
So we met because I saw your profile on Workaway, and I saw that you were interested in youth, sports, your environment, and stuff through the Tobias Foundation. What is that, or what? Can you talk a little bit about what you do in Trinidad?
Yeah. Well, the Tobias Foundation really came about as a project founded by myself and a couple of my friends back in maybe 2008. Kind of saw the need for assisting kids in rural areas. And I myself grew up in a rural area, Toko, just a part of Trinidad, the northeastern part of Trinidad. And it's a small village, but there's a wealth of talent there. I mean, we play everything from soccer to golf. You know, Toko people are all over the world. We do a lot of sports, we into entertainment. But at the same time, there's a lot more that could be done due to the lack of infrastructure and the access equipment and sponsors. We sort of, people always say people who live in rural areas are behind God's back, in the sense that nobody cares, nobody look out for you. So it's always a struggle to make it out in the, what we call in the light, like to come out from there, to be in the city area, to be seen, to be known, to be helped and assisted by people. Being from there, and as I said, back in 2008, I was training for an event, and I saw some kids running to the beach without shoes. Like, you know, they had, I guess they were training for some event coming up, and I decided, like, wait, at some point, like, I should try to help, because I love sneakers myself. Mm-hmm. So, like, what could I do to assist? So I reached out to one of the coaches, and to figure, like, okay, could I donate some sneakers to them? And from there, like, a friend of mine's, Ricky Tang, told me, like, Toby, why won't you ask other people to donate their slightly used sneakers as well? Maybe that could work too. So coming out of that, we founded a program called Save a Soul, where we will ask people to donate their used sneakers in order to give to people who could actually use them to do train, to do something other than just use one pair of sneakers to go to school, to go and hang out and stuff like that. Because a lot of these areas, it's kind of hard for parents to afford 2 and 3 sneakers. Because, I mean, a lot of people in rural areas, they work, little labor jobs, and they may not make the kind of money affording them to buy a couple of sneakers for the kids. So we started there. The manager and I decided back then, like, why don't you just form a foundation and do something more legit? Hence the reason we founded the Tobias Foundation. And it just kept on growing from assisting with sneakers. You saw the need to assist in after-school program, introduce new sports to people. And we started moving, and other people started reaching out and giving advice, giving assistance. And here we are today. We do whatever comes our way in regards to helping kids in rural areas, and it's really based out of Toko, but we've been doing work all over the world, East Africa, we do work up in the Caribbean, you know, we do work in the States here, which is New York, at the beach with kids, with surfing as well, and we partner with a lot of different organizations. Once, the goal is mainly to help and assist kids, especially in rural areas.
Yeah, so we're here today because we're working on this bike project together. But like, how did you personally get into running or biking?
Started running for life. Yeah, it's kind of a strange story. But again, living in a rural area, you need to be able to do certain things as a youth. You know, which is run, for instance, ride a bike, another thing. It's just part of growing up in rural areas, because most people have like an old bike somewhere around, so we make use of that, and it's like the village bike, so everybody uses it. Somebody know their neighbor have a bike, they go over and borrow the bike, and we sort of learn to ride that way, you know, just any bike. And also there are like very few shops in these areas, and most of the time you don't find yourself living close to a shop. And your parents will send you out to get something in the shop. And you need to run and get it now. You know, don't you get it now. you know, trying to keep up with your parents and them is always a hard task. My dad, he's a fisherman. He's a, what we call, he loved fishing. So let's just say that way. His trade wasn't like he needed to fish to make money to take care of his kids. He just loved fishing. It was a hobby for him. What like you guys would call a hobby. That's how we view fishing. So my dad, we used to go fishing. My dad and I used to go fishing approximately 3-4 miles from home. And we need to walk to that beach. And my dad walks pretty fast. And me as a 11, 10-year-old, trying to keep up with him. Sometimes I have to make a little jog every now and again just to keep pace. And I'm toting my own tackling as well. And also to get back home. Sometimes he actually stays by the beach. I need to get back home. So I started running. I just to go get stuff in the shop. We live 2 miles, like about a mile and a half to 2 miles from the nearest shop. To get shop stuff in the shop, we need to run to that to get back home. I used to take care of animals. So I constantly used to be running, just started out basic, as I said, just running for life, just running to get things done, just running as a part of my life to make things happen. Until one day, like, we had a school sports, and my friends always keep telling me, like, you should try running, you should try competing. But I never saw it as something I could really do. You know, I was always scared of the coming out. Like, I was a very shy person, so I was always scared to go out and do things in public. And one day I finally decided, like, hey, I'll take part in school sports. I didn't do too good, mainly because I was too shy. Mm-hmm. But my teacher back then, a guy called Mr. Ogaro, decided, like, you should train. And I started doing a little training, started competing for my school, in my school. Again, I left school, so I didn't keep it up. I just did a couple of little races in the neighborhood. Again, I just went back in my hole. I really loved surfing. Surfing was my passion. So instead of running out to compete, I'll actually try to be by the beach more to surf. But somewhere wrong in... Yeah, I can't remember the timing, but I think 1998 or 97, somewhere around there, I joined a program and stop. Tommy wasn't recorded.
You're on the hook.
I joined a program called the Civilian Conservation Course, and there I found a guy called Dexter Borza, or he found me, whichever happened. Mm. And long story short, he took me from being able to having the talent to run, but actually making me a runner. Mm-hmm. He actually trained me, taught me the skills and all of this thing, and I started to grow, and I started competing for Trinidad and Tobago in 10K, 5K, on the track. I used to do 5,000 and up, and at some point we decided, like, wait, I had too much energy. Like, he can't get me to expel all my energy on the track. For some reason, I can't put it all out on the track. When we finished training, I always had a little something again in the tank. Yeah. So, and always a desire of mine to do triathlon. I used to see a guy called Jason Gooding, who was the national champion back in Trinidad for many years, I think like 11 or 12 years maybe. And I always saw him, and I always tell myself, like, wow, one day I want to do this event. Like, I wish that is the thing I want to do, because I couldn't swim, like, competitively, but I could surely ride, and I could surely run. And riding for me was, like, just taking a bike, like, in my neighborhood and riding around. I didn't know about clippings and all these sort of kind of terms. I didn't know nothing about a proper bike.
We're looking at this crazy, what is carbon fiber Orbea bike that you've raced on. I think it's light as a feather.
Yeah. I've come a long way since then.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm playing an interview with Toby Clarence Tobias, my Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project partner that I just met with this weekend. I've got another half of that interview still coming up, where we talk more about, like, the project and what it might look like. For new listeners, the project is, so, like, I live here in Northampton, but I spent this chunk of the winter in Trinidad, and I'm collecting bikes, trying to get a shipping container full of them to send to Trinidad Probably at this point, I think it will be in the spring, like maybe February or March. Anyway, if you have a bike to donate, you can drop it off at my house, 8 High Street in Florence, or the bike lab at 12 Northern Avenue. Anytime. You can look on the Pedal People website under Bike Lab, and there's a link to the project with a GoFundMe page link and all that. But we're going to play a little Chronics here, and then I'll come back to the rest of the interview with Toby.
Pressures of a life and it tough. Now stay down, mama, time pick it up. Now bother with it down, full style, strictly up, full vibes. Now pick it up when the bills, them, the rent and the mortgage due. Yeah. When me chalice, when your best friends are gone and it's only you. Yeah. Light up a split, turn up the music. Skanking sweet, everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and your brings everything together. So make we sing together. And who said life no hard? And every man got this struggle. I beg you to help me, Lord. And let me overcome my troubles. Skanking sweet, yeah. Everybody wanna feel like free. Forget your troubles and you rock with me. You know, feel a reggae music sweet, yeah.
This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. Back to the interview with Clarence Tobias, also known as Toby, my partner in the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project.
Yeah, so just working with Dexter. After I heard up my track and field career, I decided I moved to the States for a little bit, and I guess my eyes opened up a little. I came out of that shy shell that I was in, and I wanted to challenge myself, and I decided when I go back home, I want to do triathlon. I want to get into triathlon. I did a couple of training programs from the internet, and I started training myself with the help and assistance of Dexter. And from there, I think everything sort of fall in line with me being very good at it. I went from a nobody from one event to doing two events and being somebody. I think I had the energy, I had the power, and story from there is sort of kind of vague.
How did you get your first surfboard?
That's a story I can't tell. Sorry.
You used to be a police officer for 15 years too, right?
Yeah. I can't tell that story right now. But I think my first official surfboard, a guy gave it to me. His name actually was Mario. Is Mario, sorry. Yeah, Mario had a board that was beat up. We used to call it the Titanic. It would take all the water out of the ocean once you take it out of the beach. Had so many holes in it. But that was my first surfboard. But just kind of kept on working that board. And at some point, I had enough money to purchase a secondhand board from Alan Davis, who was a shaper in Trinidad at that time. He still shares, but he don't operate out of Trinidad that much anymore. I had the opportunity to purchase a board from him, and I just started buying boards as I go along. But I could only afford one board at a time.
Yeah.
Even in Trinidad, we just sort of need two boards max most of the time because the waves are sort of consistent. So I never needed a lot of boards. I have a ton of boards now because of the opportunity I've been given. But back then, you just make use of what you had.
So I want to talk for a minute before the time's up about the Trinidad Bicycle Osmosis Project. So what do you feel like you... So, I'm collecting all these bikes, and I'm excited that you're excited about receiving them. What do you see? What do you envision might happen with them once they get to Trinidad?
That's a good question. Bike, as I said before, bike for individuals in rural areas or any part of Trinidad is like a major asset. Because to get from point A to point B, for most of us, we need to get there sort of soon and back home. And having bike as a means of transportation, it's like a major plus for us. As it stands now, a lot of youths in rural areas ask for bikes. One of the main things you ask a kid for in Trinidad for Christmas, he'll tell you, is a bike. It's a means of communicating with your friends, getting to be closer with your friends, moving with your crew. We could go places, We could come out of our village and go to the next village. And we don't need mommy to drop us because mommy don't have a car. We don't need to stop by the road and wait for a taxi. We could actually do it on our own and have fun while it's doing it. And also to enjoy the outdoor. It's just one more activity that we could do together as friends and family that we can enjoy our surrounding, our outdoors. And even at some point, it might even become like myself, turn into a career. Because I took my hobby and the things that I like or love to do back then, which was running and surfing, and made something out of it. And it's because people give me that opportunity. I was blessed enough that people assisted me with gears and equipment, and also give me that kind of guideline to show me, hey, you can make something of yourself with this. People actually make money doing this. So if you train properly, apply yourself properly, and be disciplined about it, something can happen. But it all comes with a network system. I'm a strong believer of charity, but I'm also a strong believer of respecting that charity and having a follow-up and some sort of continuity with charity, because it's a start, it's just a start, and you need to sort of teach the people who are receiving that what they're receiving, what's the benefit of it, what could be done, and how to maintain these things, like, you know, and all the sort of thing that sort of come together with it to make it one total package, as I should say. But as it stands, and I was very grateful that you had reached out to me in the beginning there, and you started talking about bikes, which is again one of the things I get excited about, and another thing to know that you actually want to give bikes to people in Trinidad, which is a huge, sorry about that, which is a huge benefit to us. And I'm here, and my foundation, the foundation I'm a part of, the Tabas Foundation, is more than willing to assist in any way, form and fashion that we can to make this adventure a successful one.
Alright, you have time for one more question?
Sure.
So when you think about people using bikes in Trinidad, and you talk about your experience, like, how much do you think girls will use them? And what are the challenges and opportunities there?
How much I think girls will use them? I think as far as we will allow them to. Girls always want to be included. I think a lot of girls want to be included in sporting activity back home, just as riding bikes. So sometimes I take my bikes out to the train and feel like when I go play basketball or go to jog, and everybody, girls, kids, everybody wants to get a ride on your bike. Everybody wants, and girls, they're not shy about it. But like, we at times don't give them the opportunity because we think they are girls and they shouldn't be doing that. Like, that's a guy thing. For some reason, even if we don't think it, it's there in our subconscious mind, I believe that is. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a lot of work that we still like to believe that needs to be done. Like right now, if I have to guess real hard, there may be only 2 women at surf in Trinidad, if so much. Like, I've, being honest, I can't remember the last time I've surfed with a woman back in Trinidad. Hmm. Woman, girl, anything of that sort. It's only guys. Why is that? So it's the same thing. It's not like I think girls are interested. I think they want to be interested. They want to be a part of stuff like riding bikes and being a part of something like this. But is that reach out? We need to reach out to them and break that gap. And let them know it's comfortable for them to come in. It's comfortable. It's okay for you to be a part of us. It's okay for you to roll with us and cycle with us as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think a little bit about, like, my role. It's great that I'm a woman to try and that might help, like, as a role model, bring more girls or women in. But at the same time, I'm also, like, the white person coming from the United States. You know, so I'm a little bit, I don't know. Yeah. Trying to be really super conscious about that role and how it's seen, how to play that.
Yeah, but the good thing is, Trinidad is a networking place, and we are not that big. 1.3 million people, you know, counting. Mm-hmm. It's easy place to connect, and once you get a message out, there are females that are in positions that are more than willing to come forward and make something like this happen, you know, because I know a lot of ladies who ride and compete, and I'm sure if I just run it by them, which I will in the future, let them know what we are about, what we are doing, and they're going to be on board, and we're going to make this thing a successful venture.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be working on it with you.
Yeah, bless up. And thanks for working on my bikes and them this morning and taking the time to come out here.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was an interview with Clarence Tobias, also known as Toby, from the Tobias Foundation in Trinidad. That interview was done in Rockaway Beach, New York, on Monday, August 19th, 2019. A couple things that I want to mention about that, some things that were said. Well, first off, I want to give a shout out to Fiona Kolbinger, who was the first woman to win this transcontinental bike race across Europe earlier in August. And talking about women and bikes, something else I wanted to mention. Oh, yeah, Toby talked a little bit about charity, or like that I'm giving the bikes. So those details are yet to be figured out, like the giving versus the selling, what the cost will be, how all the money's going to go around. I've told some of the partners there that I'm working with that I might sell them for like $30 a bike. there's much to be figured out, which hopefully in the next few months, well, not hopefully, in the next few months, we'll figure it out. So before I go to the next interview, which is with Serene from Hampshire College about composting there, I got another song. This is Protégé with Blood Money.
Watch no face, beg no more pardon. Enough drugs, money, they are cherry garden. Enough individual society applauding. You can ask anybody where them get them starting. But no politician take a donation. So no criminal will never see a station. Never see a cell, not even a courthouse. But every Sunday we see them take a boat out. North Coast Resort and car dealership. The construction company, them just don't legit. Usually wash the money, turn it round and hide it. When the kickback them come in, the government delight it. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station. Now if you check your situation, hey. A blood money running nation. Come take a look in a Jamaica. Injustice in the place now. If what you see no really faze you, hey. Then you want the problem what we face to. Was about to buy a next 60 now. Maybe then I never have to be a prisoner. Maybe then I could have not turn in my firearm. Police couldn't come remand. Come in like me run an army. Was about to be a politician too. Maybe then I could have make any decision look. Maybe then I make $100 million disappear. Then me act like me no care. Watch your vote me back in there. Because this sad reality. In a Jamaica say your status or your salary. Man, the road I carry one whole heap of felony. But them have a family, a boost up the economy. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station, hey. Now if you check his situation, a blood money running nation, Come take a look in a Jamaica, Injustice in the place now, If what you see no really face you, then you what the is out of many, but a one set of people feeling it. How that real society you agree to this? Things are revealed, the garbage, the machine spit. No smoke screen, a river and no conceal it. Now the system failing, the gap a get wider. A matter of time before a total divide ya. You cross the line, man, draw quick for remind you. If you believe pan crime, then crime will have to find you. And that's how it's been always. That no frustrate you like it do to me. How much dead baby they over Jubilee? How much used it 10 when them running at the valley? Now them 16 heart fry head fricassee. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station. Hey, now if you check his situation, a blood money running nation. Hey, come take a look in a Jamaica. Injustice in the place now. If what you see no really face you, then you want the problem what we face you.
This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP in Northampton, Massachusetts, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Before I get to the interview with Serene Nimhart of Hampshire College about composting, I wanted to mention a few other things. I want to read this little letter. This is a letter that was printed in a bunch of newspapers around the country entitled Querida Familia Latina. And it's signed by many people from the Latinx community. If you are feeling terrified, heartbroken, and defeated by the barrage of attacks on our community, you're not alone. We've been smeared by political rhetoric and murdered in violent hate crimes. We've been separated from our families and have watched our children caged. We've been targeted with mass shootings and mass ICE raids meant to terrify us, squash our hope, and break our spirits. But we will not be broken. We will not be silenced. We will continue to denounce any hateful and inhumane treatment of our community. We will demand dignity and justice. Though real pain and fear are sweeping through our communities, we remain powerful. The indignities and cruelty we've endured will never change the truth that the contributions we make to this country are invaluable. Our humanity must be respected. And we won't stop organizing for ourselves, our children, and for the soul of this nation. To our allies who feel our community's pain, we need you. We cannot make change without your voices and action. We call on you to speak out loudly against hate, to contribute your resources to organizations that support our community, and to hold our leaders accountable. We ask you to join us in building a better country where we are all safe and valued. May we turn this time of despair into a time of action. May our love for one another be the guiding light in these dark times. With our deepest love, and there's a whole lot of signatures, sponsored by the Querida Familia Latina, Latinx Leaders and Allies. For more information, contact queridafamilialetter@gmail.com. Also want to mention, if you live in Greenfield or the Greenfield area, there's a city council meeting happening this evening. So back in July, the Greenfield City Council passed a Safe Cities Ordinance, but then one of the city councilors submitted a motion to reconsider, and so the ordinance is going to be taken up again by the council this evening. The ordinance would prohibit city officials from asking about a person's immigration status or taking law enforcement action against someone on the basis of perceived immigration status, and targeting someone or discriminating against an institution that's providing refuge to immigrants and their families. So if you can show up at the Greenfield City Council meeting this evening and speak out in favor of the Safe Cities Ordinance, that would be great. From what I understand, so even though it was passed in July, it's like people who are opposed to the Safe Cities Ordinance got enough signatures to bring it to a ballot measure in November. If you're in the Greenfield area, please, wherever we are, speak out for creating a safe space for everyone who lives here. Now I'm going to go. So this is an interview with Serene Nimhart, a Hampshire College junior who's spearheading an effort to expand composting on Hampshire College campus. This interview is from Tuesday, August 20th, 2019.
Hi, my name is Serene Nimhard, and I'm basically working on expanding Hampshire's compost system to all the residences and to all the academic buildings, so Hampshire is entirely compostable, basically.
Cool. So you're in your third year at Hampshire College. How did you get involved, and what's been going on so far?
I am not an environmental studies student at all. I'm mostly an art student, photography student. But I took a class with a really cool professor named Kara Lynch called Abundance. And basically, it's about how to decolonize land with intention, basically right now. And one of our projects was to go to a space and just observe it, and then go to the space again and interact with it. And so I went to the Kern Center, which is like an entirely, it's supposed to be like entirely like solar panel powered, and like everything is like run by solar power. There's like compostable toilets. And so basically I just like watched people do this like weird shuffle, when they went to the trash. So there's like compost, like landfill trash, recycling. And everything at in the Kern Center is compostable. So basically people would do this like weird shuffle where they'd be like, is this compostable? Is this trash? And I just kind of like filmed them. and for my way of like interacting with the space was I was going to also go and film in like the library and see if people did the same shuffle, if people were as conscious about composting or the trash system as they were in the current system, current center, which is like, you know, there's like so much emphasis on it. But what happened is when I got to the library, there was no compost anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically got me to like make a compost bucket in the shop and like put it in the library, and the librarians got very angry at me. And eventually, like at the end of this like whole journey of me being like, there needs to be compost everywhere, I was introduced to the alumni, Sarah Brown, who basically started the compost in the residences. And she was like, I can basically help you out and help you with your journey to get compost in the academic buildings, because that's what I wanted. But I graduated and I'm not as close to Hampshire anymore. So basically, I started this work study job where I first was trying to expand compost everywhere because it was only happening in Enfield. So basically, I became the one of the like signers for this environmental studies club called New Leaf. And what we did was we took money that New Leaf gets for like just being a club, and we bought a bunch of like buckets that said compost and are like all green, and we printed out all of these like, this is compost, this is what is compostable, like this is what isn't compostable. And we gave that out to all the residences, Prescott, Greenwich. And so basically over the last year, I've expanded compost pickup, work study pickup from just one residence, which is Enfield, to all of the other residences. In the summer, what my internship is basically expanding it to the academic buildings as well. And trying to figure out a route and a system that makes the most sense for all the work study students to go through to basically just like compost what's in the library, compost what is in like the science building, what is in like the photography building, because there isn't compost there. And basically that's what I want to do. And that's how I got involved. It's a very long and kind of funny story, but that's how I got involved. That's cool. Yeah.
Well, how much compost, what is the compostable material that's coming out of these buildings?
For the residences, it's mostly just like anything that like any household would compost. So like there's chicken, there's like, you know, leftovers from meals. Sometimes we get like just fresh fruits and vegetables and it doesn't make any sense. And sometimes we just like snag that and like eat it for ourselves. But it's just basically anything that you would find in like an average house, because people just cook for themselves.
Okay. But then at the library and the academic buildings, is it just like what people might bring to lunch and not eat or something?
Yeah, so for the library and the academic buildings, it's food from the bridge, which is like another like dining area.
Oh, in some of the buildings?
Yeah, that's in some of the buildings. So like chicken fingers, like fries, burgers. And then there's also things that people buy from the Kern Center that are entirely compostable, but they take it out of the Kern Center and there's no way for them to compost it. So basically we're getting materials like that and like helping to reduce so much like landfill waste. Yeah.
Okay. So the compostable material, the organics that come from the cafeteria type place, you said that Hampshire has a place on campus where they do some composting.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Can you just elaborate?
Okay. So Hampshire College does have a composting place for some food scraps.
Yeah.
But then all the stuff that you're picking up that comes from the residences and that will come from the academic buildings,
that goes somewhere else.
That will go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so what, can you explain that?
To that a little bit? Basically, Hampshire has a farm. And what we do is there's a dining commons area. So basically, if you're a first year, most first years have a meal plan and they go to the dining commons area. And all of that food is basically composted. There are like three huge buckets, because like there's no like actual trash. There's three huge like compost waste bins. And when you're done with your food, you just like throw everything in there and it goes to our farm on campus. And that's where they use the compost for basically like, I don't know, feeding the animals, like growing the vegetables, growing the gourds over like the summer. And then we have the compost from the residences, which can't go to our farm. I want it to go to our farm. I hope that one day we can get it to be that good. Yeah, so basically the compost from the residences has to go to Martin's farm, because there's like compostable cups and compostable straws and like silverware, and we can't compost that. It's not bio, like our compost is not that like well infrastructured,
okay,
I guess.
Okay, yeah, the on campus pile or facility.
Can't do that. Okay. So Martin's Farm comes and picks up our compost.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what are some of the challenges in increasing compost on campus?
Oh my gosh. The challenges are the people, the administration. I wouldn't even call it the administration. I've really run into a lot of trouble with the library. I think that because I created the like fake compost bin in the beginning of last semester, they aren't taking me as seriously this summer when I put up actual compost boxes. They're like, you can't compost here. They've moved them. They've thrown them out. And like constantly I've said, you know, like I have an internship to do this. I've talked to facilities and grounds. You're not in charge of waste management. Like you can't tell me that compost can't be here. It's just another like space to put waste. So that's definitely one of the like hugest challenge. And also another like huge challenge is just like compost education, just like teaching people like compost isn't smelly or gross. If like we come, we pick it up about every 2 weeks. There are buckets that have lids, so like it shouldn't get smelly. I had compost in my mod all last year, and it never got gross. It never got smelly. Pickup happened on time, and it was very consistent. So I think that that's one of like the biggest challenges is that people just don't know or they're not aware of what's going on and what compost really is and like is about.
You're listening to an interview with Serene Nimhart from Hampshire College. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP in Northampton, 103.3 FM. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. We've got another 5 minutes of the interview with Serene. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock.
Compost, the landfill, trash, and that process. And what happens to this stuff?
So, like, compost is just so important. Everything that goes to the landfill is just, like, going to a landfill. Everyone knows this. It's just, like, in a heap. It doesn't have any more use, really. Whereas compost is just, like, it starts as food, and then it turns into food again, or it's food for something else, which is really amazing and very cool. And you can kind of just, like, watch the process. You can go from just, like, someone eating a meal and throwing out their compost all the way to basically the place that deals with the compost and what they use it for, which is really amazing. And also I think compost and recycling is something to look at, because a lot of the time people are like, you have to recycle, recycling is very important, recycling is great, but recently we just don't even know what is happening with our recycling, where it's actually going, and it promotes sort of overconsumption in a way, because you're saying like, oh, I can buy this and I can recycle it, it'll turn into something new, but you know, how about we just like use the things that we have instead of just like consuming and consuming and consuming and creating more waste and creating more like, you know, toxic like things in the world. Whereas like compost is just like, there's no mystery there. You know what you're getting, and it's very great, and you know that it's like amazing for the environment.
It's great to hear you say that. Sometimes in federal people, we refer to recycling as glorified trash.
Yeah, and it's just glorified trash.
Because a lot of times with recycling, even if it does get recycled, it's often just downcycled.
Yeah.
Like once or twice or something. It pains me to think about local farmers growing this really great food and then what's not eaten getting entombed in a landfill and stripped from the soil of Western Mass.
Exactly.
Like the loss of topsoil and just like stripping the land of those resources and entombing them.
Yeah, it just feels like a giant entombment. very scary thing. And I mean, like, that's like what I've been doing at Hampshire, is like trying to find waste or things that people are throwing away, especially like in the shop, like metal scraps, and like reusing them and making them into something new. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting that I've just like sort of fallen into compost, and it like relates so much with the work that I'm doing, the art that I'm making. So it's very cool.
I was thinking about when people send organic material to the landfill, it made me think of like deporting these resources and sending them to permanent prison.
Yeah, exactly.
When they belong here, they belong here.
They belong here. They should be composted. Oh my goodness, it's so much. Cool. It's just like good to feel like, I don't know, like it feels small that I'm just like, you know, sometimes I like see one bucket of compost and I'm like, that's not a lot. But like when you really think about it, like compost pickup is happening like twice a week and about like 100 mods and residences and like in like a, what is that? Like a
5 gallon
bucket. So that's a lot of compost. Like we're really doing a huge job. When it comes down to it, we're like really kind of making a dent in how much compost is like happening.
Yeah, it's super exciting to, you know, to hear about, you know, the efforts you all are making and what you're doing. So why did you contact Petal People?
Why did I contact Petal People? I don't know, because Petal People is just like so, I don't know, I've just heard about Petal People and I see you all riding your bikes and like dealing with the waste, and that's something that like not everyone wants to do, and I think that it's very cool, and it's really cool to like know about your system and what you do and how it works, and just like, I don't know, finding ways that we can model our own compost system at Hampshire based off of yours and like collaborate. I think that that's why I decided to contact Petal People.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for reaching out. All the best. Let us know if we can support the efforts.
Yeah, of course. Very cool.
All right. Thank you. Anything else?
Compost. Everyone, just compost. I say this word all the time. It just has become like a silly word, but compost, very important.
That was Serene Nimhart. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening today. If you want to listen to past editions of Out There, you can look at the archives, weatherbeard.com/out there. And if I haven't updated them all quite yet, but you might find something at weatherbeard.com/out there archive. The Florence Farmers Market is happening right now every Wednesday during the growing season from 2 until 6. So check that out if you're in Florence. Support the local farmers. Also coming up this Saturday and every Saturday, the Bike Lab. You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is. And we're going to close with Jean Rowe with a new national anthem, Arise, Arise.
Atlantic and Pacific floor, Great Lakes and the Gulf of Mexico, the land between sustains us all, to cherish it, our tireless call. Arise, arise, I see the future in your eyes, to a more perfect union aspire, and lift our voices from the fire. We reach these shores from many lands. We came with hungry hearts and hands. Some came by force, and some by more perfect.
Is on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m. Turn on your radio for great sounds from international reggae artists, roots, dancehall, DJ mixes, and rhythms. Get down with Reggae Down every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Valley Free Radio.
It makes me feel free.
I do it to save money.
I feel in charge when I'm doing it.
It's a healthy way of life.
Why do you bicycle instead of driving a car?
It's a good way to fit more exercise into my day.
Bicycling is a fun, healthy, economical, and fuel-efficient way to travel. Enjoy the ride. Take your bike. Brought to you by the Franklin Regional Council of Governments and Pioneer Valley Planning Commission, with funding provided by the Federal Highway Administration and Massachusetts Executive Office of Transportation. Come visit enjoytheridebybike.com.
My name is Mira. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way to make the community stronger. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org and the Ad Council.
Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. Join me, DJ Vinyl Scratch, on the warm heart of Africa. From Cape Town to the Congo, Marrakesh to Mogadishu, and to the New World and beyond, we explore the best in pop music from Africa and the Afro diaspora all across the globe. Once again, that's 7 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, only on Valley Free Radio.